How do you get into the zone? We've all heard about it, but we're just not sure how to get there. Well, I've talked to a couple of guys who figured it out, and they've written a book that's going to tell you how to get into the zone. Get ready to take some notes.
Welcome to the Go Forth and Golf Podcast, where you can listen to everything related to the game of golf. Golf tips to help you improve your golf game, entertaining interviews, discussions about the latest in golf equipment, and so much more. Now, here is your host, PGA professional, Steve Goforth.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome back to the podcast. Greatly appreciate you pushing the play button. I hope you've been doing well since the last time you listened to my voice and that your game is getting better and progressing. In this podcast, I have a fantastic conversation with a couple of guys who have written a wonderful book to help you figure out how to get into the zone. Bo Watson and Shannon Shusky have written a book called In the Zone Secrets, How to Get in the Zone at the Flip of a Switch. I love that title. And they're going to share some really powerful information with you that will help you find that illustrious zone that we've all heard about. We're just not quite sure how to get in the zone. And on top of that, how to stay in the zone. So Bo and Shannon share some really helpful tips on how to do that. We talk about several things like their background and their training. How do they come up with this? Where do they get this idea? Shannon's background with the Olympic skating team that kind of led them on this journey. The importance of practicing correctly, because a lot of people get obsessed with the proper swing mechanics, but they talk about how you can also practice using mental imagery, as well as how to focus on breathing and kinesthetic mental imagery. So they'll kind of explain what that is with kinesthetic mental imagery. Fascinating stuff. How to overcome competition anxiety. I mean, how many of us have experienced that, right? I mean, we get ready to go into a tournament. We have our A game on, and it just blows up. And we don't know why that happens. So overcoming anxiety, competition anxiety is huge. And they share their tips on that. And also how to do a very thorough post-round review. So these are just a few things we talk about during this conversation. I really, really encourage you to listen to this thing all the way through because it is really good stuff. As you know, I have really dedicated myself to expanding a lot on the mental game because I feel like that's more important than anything else when it comes to this game. You've heard the expression that this game is 90% mental and 10% physical, and there's so much truth to that. And I really want to make sure that when doing this podcast for you, I am helping you not only with your swing, but also how to attack your game with the right mindset. It's so important, and hopefully you have picked that up by now of how important that is to me and conveying that to you. So get ready to take some notes on this great conversation I had with Bo and Shannon. And without a doubt, I know this is going to be extremely helpful for your game. And it's going to take your game to the next level.
Oh, he got out of that one.
Bo and Shannon, how are you guys? I really appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Yeah, we're doing good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Steve. Looking forward to it.
Well, you guys wrote an incredible book. It's called In the Zone Secrets, How to Get in the Zone at the Flip of a Switch. And I love that title. It's awesome. So what motivated you guys to do this? What inspired you guys to write a book such as this?
You know, it's actually really interesting because we actually do cover this in the beginning of the book and we actually share more of the background of the story, but I'll kind of give a very quick 20,000 foot view of how this all came about. And it all started back in 2016. Steve, like yourself, you know, I was actually running my own golf school. I was actually seeing a lot of success in this like 5-year span. And I'm a type A personality. So every person that comes to me, I really want to make sure that they're actually improving. And it's funny because there were a few students that were coming to me over these period of months And toward the end, and again, I'll get to that in a second, where I shut down the golf school and I walked away from the game. But there was this one particular client that on paper was strokes gained data, going out and actually doing playing sessions, and we're on the range hitting shots. And this guy on paper should be shooting in tournament rounds in the mid to low 70s. But the problem and the disconnect and the biggest issue that we kept running into was when it came down to when it mattered in a tournament setting, he was always shooting in the upper 80s and low 90s. And it was like that was his job. Like he did it routinely week after week after week. And it literally got to a point where we had an honest conversation in September of 2018. And I said, I can't help you. And we agreed to part ways. And honestly, that very night, I was so frustrated. And this is like everything coming to a head after seeing students saying, Bo, why is it that I start really well on the front side and I blow up on the backside? Why is it I play really bad on the front side and I do really great on the backside? Or why is it I get to this one hole and I do really, really poorly every single time? And it's because of this water that's on the right-hand side. And it's like, if I don't hit it in there, then I pull it so far left, I'm OB left. And it was these kind of things that students kept coming up to me, and I didn't have an answer for because I was struggling with a lot of the same things. And that night, that was the end. Like I was ready. I threw in the towel. I started throwing out my resume to numerous job opportunities, and I stepped away from the game for good. Had no desire to ever come back into this game. And then Shannon comes into my life. And we can expand on that if we want, but just real quick. Shannon and I, we meet, we go out to dinner, and we're having a conversation. And I was like, "Man, what do you do?" And he was like, "Well, I'm an operating manager at Gold's Gym." I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." But he said, "I was also a speed skating coach." And I was like, "Wow, that's interesting. Tell me more." And he said, "Well, I was the national team manager for the U.S. national team for inline speed skating, and then on top of that, I." Was like, well, that's pretty cool. Well, what was your resume? Like, how'd you do? And the next thing he says was, I coached 142 national champions, 8 world champions, and 2 Olympic medalists. And my mouth was like pretty much dropped. I
Yeah,
was
no
like,
doubt.
wow, this is Hall of Fame resume, right? And I go, well, that's cool. So what'd you do? How was that? Like, how did that come about? And Steve, the very next thing he said, well, if you really want to know, I was able to get my speed skaters trick their bodies into the zone. I started laughing. I still laugh today. And I said, you're full of it. There's no way. And the very next thing he does is he takes his phone out and he starts scrolling on the phone and he pulls up a screenshot after screenshot after screenshot of all his former national champions, one of his Olympic medalists, and then several record breaking skaters. And they're all saying the same thing. They're like, I found a custom trigger and I'm using this, and they're staying in the zone and they're in flow state. And I'm like, that's cool, Shannon. I get it that it works for speed skating, but I don't mean any disrespect, but there's no way it's gonna work for the game of golf. And I said, you gotta understand, I stepped away from the game of golf 2 years ago, and I have no desire to ever go back into it. And here's the thing, I had read all the mental books out there. I have read mental books outside of the game of golf. But you're telling me that you have found a system when all the sports psychologists have said over and over and over again that what flow state is or what end the zone is, but nobody or any single author has ever shown a step-by-step process on how to get there. And you're telling me you figured that out. And he said, yes. And I said, I still don't believe you. And Steve, what happened next was me. Again, we can go into that, but I'll say this. He walked me through an exercise and it got me to get a little excited. And I said, you know what? If this works, this is going to change the game of golf overnight. And I said, I'll tell you what, I am a prime candidate to see if this works or not. I said, Shannon, I haven't touched a club in 2 years. I haven't practiced, I haven't done anything. But I'll tell you what I'll do. I will listen to everything that you shared with your skaters and I will apply it to my game. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go cold turkey to the first tee, not going to hit a single warm-up shot. I'll hit a few putts, and that's it. And Steve, in 2018, the second half of that year, I play 8 rounds. 6 out of the 8 rounds, I go under par. I went from a 2.4 index down to a plus 1.7 within 6 months.
Wow. Shannon, share one of those tips if you can. I mean, he's Bo's story's got me intrigued. I mean, what can trigger something like that?
Well, it comes down to, I mean, in college, in psychology 101, if anybody's ever taken that, you know, as an elective or anything like that, that's kind of where the science behind it started unfolding for me, because it's the, you know, Pavlov's dogs. A lot of people that, you know, taken it, everybody's heard of it for that's taken psychology 101. Of classical conditioning, and where, you know, where the light comes on, food drops out, and the dog salivates and is eating the food, and then, you know, after weeks of conditioning the dog, then all of a sudden, what happened was they had a buzzer or a light. They actually used different things to trigger, and they all worked. And then the food wouldn't drop out, but the dog would still salivate.
Right.
And so it was very similar with how what we're doing to our bodies. And the little trick that I took Bo through was, and instead of actually going through like mental imagery to on here, it was very simple. How often have we been in a conversation talking about food, our favorite food, and all of a sudden our mouth starts watering, whether it be our favorite dessert or something like that? And it's very similar. It's because we've conditioned to do that. It's a my thing was this was I was actually in a place in speed skating where before I got heavily into speed skating, I was actually I played soccer, I played semi-pro, and I was pretty fast. I was a pretty fast guy. However, with the team that I skated on, we actually had, just kind of give a background, we had over 22 national champions in their respective age group levels. So we were kind of like the who's who team in speed skating. So whenever I stepped up to the starting line, I was always getting last off the start. And I was like, what's going on? Because whenever we're messing around and I had shoes on, I'd beat them hands down. And so I was like, man, there's a disconnect. Very similar, like in golf, you know, how many people have a disconnect from being on the range, actually being on the course? They could do it on the range, but once they get on the course, you know, with the pressure and stuff like that, they're not able to perform that. Well, that's the same thing as what was going on with me. And so I read all the mental books and stuff like what Bo had talked about, and mental performance, because I knew that there was a disconnect. So then within, I figured out, okay, I need to trigger my body and do it with mental imagery married together with it, and as well as adding an emotion. We call it kinesthetic mental imagery. And so that's what I was doing. I was trigger I was, and so here's the trick. It's like going to the gym. When you go to the gym, you know, like if you're going to work on chest that day, you go, all right, I'm going to get, let's say, 5 reps 3 times, for example. So in mental imagery, you kind of got to do the same thing. And that's what I was doing, was I was getting mental reps in using a trigger with a backed by emotion and mental imagery to get it dialed in. And that's one of the things that I showed him step by step how to do. And the and just like what Bo was saying, we still laugh at it today, because his last words was leaving me on the night that we had dinner was, I'm going to prove you wrong. And he was laughing at me.
That's true.
One of the things you guys mentioned in the book was, and I found fascinating, was the importance of correct practice, because I teach that a lot to my students of, you know, practice with a purpose. Don't just get out there and mindlessly hit golf balls. And you mentioned that people just have this obsession with proper swing mechanics. And that is so true, as opposed to, you know, hey, there's other things that you need to focus on, the mental aspect of the game, how to have good course management, all those things. Elaborate on what you guys are teaching in your book when it comes to the importance of correct practice.
Shannon, you want me to take a stab on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me help the audience here with some belief, I would say faults. So the interesting thing when it comes to like practicing correctly, we have been fascinated over the last 50, 60 years with this quest for the search for the perfect swing. And the reality is there is no such thing. At the end of the day, it's not the swing that wins, it's the player. And I can't tell you how many times being inside the ropes over the years with just my relationships, I've had some incredible mentors. David Orr is my mentor, and I was one that helped him do putting research. And so he's considered one of the top in the world, if not the best, when it comes to tour players and putting instruction. Him and Phil Kenyon are neck and neck. But with all that said, I have seen many players outside the top 500 in the world rankings and even out top 1,000 Monday qualifying to a PGA Tour event or walking in a practice round. And these players have better swings than the guys that are top 10 in the world. Well, wait a minute, what's the disconnect here? And I always found just through over the years that the one biggest thing that is the separator is their mental game. Yes, short game, strokes gained approach has been a big one. We've learned that with Tiger Woods and the reason why he has been a big leader in that. But at the end of the day, what's fascinating is when you look back at Jack Nicklaus, you look at Tiger Woods, you look at Phil Mickelson, you look at Ben Hogan, Sam Snead. Here's the interesting thing that many people are overlooking, and this is why I said we need to address the belief faults. Sam Snead and Tiger are tied for the most PGA Tour wins in history. Well, we need to go back and kind of dig a little deeper into why these players are playing at such a high level. Well, what's interesting is when you look at a guy like Jack Nicklaus, who was his childhood coach, Jack Grout. Well, who was Jack Grout's mentor? Alex Morrison. Okay. Who was Ben Hogan's coach? Henry Pickard. Who was Henry Pickard's mentor? Alex Morrison. Now, who did Sam Snead learn from? Henry Pickard. Same connection. Mickie Wright, one of the best ever on the LPGA side of things. Who was her coach? It was Harry Pressler. Who was Harry's mentor? Alex Morrison. Now we got to take a step back. Who is this Alex Morrison and why in the world is he not more widely known?
Right.
I don't have an answer for that, but I hope in some way I can kind of give him some sort of tribute, so to speak, in our work and everything else, because he is kind of the godfather on the golf side of things for being the very first ever to write the book in 1940 that was called Better Golf Without Practice. Now, what's interesting about that is, and there's so many examples in that book, but one of the really interesting stories in that book I absolutely love, and for anybody that's like a high handicapper, this is really, really important to understand. There was a comedian named Lou Lor, could not break 90 to save his life. He had exhausted all the resources, tried everything under the sun, and finally comes Alex Morrison and said, "What gives? Can you help me?" Alex sits him in a chair, and over a course of 2 weeks, they only do mental imagery and him rehearsing what was famously known as Alex's five Morrison swing keys. So that's all they do. The very first round, he goes out, he shoots 87. Now, wait a second. He didn't practice physically, he didn't do any of that. He just did mental imagery and what Alex told him to do. And what's crazy is that when you look at Sam Snead, Ben Hogan, Tiger, Phil Mickelson, Jack Nicklaus, they all talk about mental imagery. Now, you may be challenging me on Tiger Woods. Well, Tiger said it in a clinic one time where he was talking about on Sundays when he is making these clutch putts and things like that on the outside, he's actually really, really nervous. I mean, on the inside, he's really, really nervous, but on the outside, he looks like he's very calm
Right.
and collective and all that. But what's interesting is the technique that he uses to pull some of these amazing putts and iconic putts that he's made over the course of his career. And it started with him saying this. He said, "The first look, I look at the hole and I take a picture. I set up over the ball, I'll take another look and I'm taking a picture." Kind of like you're taking a snap or a
Right.
picture, like with the, what do you call those things now? They're basically dinosaur now, but like,
Polaroids.
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. And then he finally, takes one last look. And he takes a picture of it. And then when he gets over to his eyes over the ball, the last thing he says to himself, "All right, Tiger, just putt to the picture," like Papa used to say. Guys,
Right.
that's mental imagery. Now, to answer the question and why I had to kind of break that all down is because there was a study done on beginner golfers, and they had three groups. The first group was they were hitting approach shot. First group is doing physical practice only. The second group is doing physical practice and mental imagery. And then the third group does something completely unrelated. What was fascinating is that the second group, the one that did physical practice and mental imagery right out of the gate, outperformed 2x what the group did with just physical practice. Why is that important to understand? Because if you guys are just doing physical practice and doing it over and over and over again over, By the time you get to the when you feel like you need to work on a middle game, it's already too late.
Hi, I'm Betsy Exton, owner of Pure Health and Wellness. If you want to take control of your health and feel amazing, I encourage you to check out Pure Health and Wellness. We have two locations, one downtown Greenville. It's called Pure on Main, across the street from the Hyatt. The other location is on Cannon Street in beautiful downtown Greer. Pure Health and Wellness provides you with essential services and products, allowing you to live a healthier, more fulfilling life. We are one of the most exclusive and unique health and wellness centers in the upstate, and we've been nominated for Greenville's Best for over 8 consecutive years. Do you want to increase your endurance, increase your mobility, get rid of joint pain, and have a better golf game? My staff and I can help you. Our stores are filled with beneficial items for your body and soul. Our services include massage therapy, ionic foot detoxes, colon hydrotherapy, wellness consulting, saunas, and body wraps. We are dedicated to help provide the best service for our community. Please give us a call and allow us to recommend the top-of-the-line products and services that are results-driven for your golf game. Steve gets all his wellness supplements from us, and it's made a huge positive impact in his life. Visit our website at pureonmain.com to learn more about our products and services. So what are you waiting for? Start living happier and healthier at Pure on Main and Pure Wellness Spa. We are a proud sponsor of the Go Forth and Golf podcast.
Yeah, that putt to the picture, I use that constantly. I read that in Tiger's dad's book, Training a Tiger. He talked about how, you know, he would teach him the putt to the picture. I use that constantly. Almost every putting lesson I give, I talk about that, and it works. I mean, I use it myself. It takes some time, obviously, to kind of trust that. And, of course, we know that some golfers like Jordan Spieth, Vijay Singh, have been known to look at the cup when they putt, when they just cannot get a good mental image of it. And that's just temporary, of course. But, yeah, that putt to the picture is huge. Shannon, I'll ask you this question. The mental imagery aspect, I mean, when I teach, I use the example of a shot tracer. You know, you stand behind the ball, see the shot, like a shot tracer you see on TV, see the ball land, roll out. What would be a good example from your standpoint, or examples of mental imagery that a golfer listening to this conversation could do on the golf course or in their practice sessions?
Well, let's talk about, because here's the thing. When it comes to your high-end athletes, when it comes to mental imagery, like, for example, Tony Gonzalez, the amount of detail that he puts in his mental imagery is incredible. I mean, it is literally as if you're there. Like, for example, you have golfers that'll do mental imagery, right? Well, my question is, can you feel the breeze? Do you feel the sweat going down your face? Right. And so to make it real, it's what I call seven senses. You got to get your seven senses activated when it comes to mental imagery. And you're like, what, seven senses? Shannon, we only have five. I'm like, well, yeah, five, you know, taste, smell, hear, touch. And so you got your five that are there, but then you need to add also limb movement. It's not just that you have to actually add limb movement. Can, and you know, as far as real, also just kind of going backwards a little bit, can you see the dimples on the ball? Can you see the blades of grass? You know, can the hear, do you hear your club going to, like, let's say if you're using driver and you're teeing off, can you hear your glove swing through the air? So, and then the sound of the ball when it hits, and then actually hear the ball flying away and seeing the trajectory. The more real you can make it, the more your body depends on it, goes into it. But here we're also adding the seventh sense, which is emotion. You add emotion to that. And what happens is emotion can change and give you a greater sense of connectedness and intensity, so to speak, of an aggression. What I mean is like, an emotion of, let's say, like a bull seeing red. That's what Bo always used. That's the analogy that he does when he adds emotion to mental imagery. A bull seeing red is so dialed in that the target is almost like a magnet pulling you in. You're being so drawn to the target. Or you can even look at it like a sniper, like an aggressive calm, so to speak, how a sniper does it and goes in. So when it comes to mental imagery, you literally have to be and make it as real as possible and feel it. So here's the thing. They actually have done studies, and they've done studies in the past, even at the Olympic level. And I was blown away because the very first thing when I was Bo mentioned about me being manager of the world team, when they took me in to do the actual presentation and going through and showing everything that was on campus, they took us into this theater at first, the very first thing they did. And I was blown away because one of the things that they talked about first on the tour, on the first day that I was there, they actually talked about how important mental imagery was. Now, isn't that interesting? That's what blew my mind. And so adding all of those things into that, making it real, and the studies that has been done, they actually put electrodes with EMG and stuff on a downhill skier, and they had him do mental imagery. And what they found out was their muscles are actually firing. Your muscles are firing. Once you get really good, you can actually feel your muscles twitch. Okay, it's a sensation that you can't really describe. You just know it's happening. And your brain cannot tell the difference. Your motor sensory of your brain cannot tell the difference as is if you're actually physically doing it or if you just mentally do it. And you hear the term all the time of my brain just went totally blank.
Muscle
That
memory.
happens. Muscle memory. Thank
Muscle
you so
memory, yeah.
much, Bo. That's why you're my friend. Muscle memory. There's no such thing as muscle memory. Your brain is what's doing it. And when you go through this, you are affecting the muscle sequencing from your brain to your muscles. And that's why it's creating those movements and you're getting those things dialed in. So that's why it's important to get all those things together when it comes to mental imagery and doing it. I got so let's talk about raising your focus on mental imagery. For example, I would say beginners, and beginners is like, okay, I'm in a room, lights are off, and I'll lay down at the foot of my bed or on my bed with my eyes shut and I'll do mental imagery. Right? We hear about that all the time, and a lot of people saying that. Well, I'll say, well, let's do this. Let's increase distractions of what might be going on. Let's turn the lights on. Let's have a TV on and start doing mental imagery. Can you still have the same effect with all that going on? All right, let's take it to a whole nother level. Let's open up our eyes and do mental imagery. All right, let's take it up to a whole nother level. I got to the point where I was so good at mental imagery, I could go through a mall with my eyes open and I'm doing mental imagery of me coming off the line for speed skating and I'm feeling my muscles twitch. And so that's the levels and the importance of it, as far as like mental imagery and some little tricks that'll help you to kind of gauge, kind of check the oil on your mental imagery, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I have found I've been blessed with a great imagination, and I can remember having a vivid imagination back to my childhood. And I've encountered a lot of students who have the same, but I also have encountered students who struggle with being creative or having that imagination or being able to picture things like that in their mind. And those are the ones that they tend to struggle with this mental imagery. Is there any tip or words of advice to give them some patience that can help them to tap into that if they really struggle with seeing those types of things in their mind?
I'll give one example real quick, and I'll let Bo finish out on this. What you want? I love what you're saying, which is amazing because you don't hear a lot of golf coaches talk about mental imagery necessarily, or apply the mental part of the game with the swing part of the game, and so. Oh my goodness, my mind went blank again.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll say this. When it comes to people that struggle with the mental imagery and seeing the image clearly, the one thing that I will say is that the brain is a muscle. And so it is a skill that can be acquired and improved and sharpened over time. And that's one of the first things we have all of our clients that come into our programs and work with us more intimately is, and again, if you get our book, it will have a vividness test that you can download, print out, and actually take it and see what your score is.
Yeah, I
And I'll
love
say
that.
this, Steve, we've had people score as low as like 24, 26, 27, which is really, really low. But then over the course of them being in our program, training and doing mental reps, we've seen that score get increased as much as 65 to 70 on that vividness test, which is a big jump. And we can see that as little as 2 months. And so that's something that we always encourage our clients is to routinely go back and keep taking the vividness test. Because as you work through this, just like your game, if you're putting in time and you're doing the right kind of practice, and again, we can go down a rabbit hole with that, but like when you're actually doing the right things and practicing it well and not just going through it mindlessly, you can really improve your skills in terms of mental imagery as a whole.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Let's say mental imagery, like a homework assignment for all the listeners, that would be this. If you want to get better at mental imagery, it, just like what Bo was talking about as far as like the muscular aspect, your brain is a muscle. So what you want to do is picture you first and foremost, you got to have a guide. You got to figure out what in the world you're doing. Are you doing chip shots? What kind of the lie is it? What kind of are you shooting over a bunker? Are you hitting over a bunker? Figure out what is going, what you're actually your shot is. Okay. After that, do your mental imagery. Do mental imagery, let's say 5 times, and literally, I mean, no longer than 20 seconds. Try to get 10 seconds in for a swing, a hit, and go. Now the question is, can you feel the air? Can you feel the breeze? Can you do all that? So what you want to do, rate yourself on a scale from 1 to 5, 5 being it was great, 3 being it was okay, and then 1 being it was not good. Okay, now then, after you do that same mental imagery, go back and do it again and try to improve in that one area. Was it the vividness? The part of it, was it clear? Was everything bright? Could you hear that? And each part of the 5 senses, and then limb movement and emotion, rate it on a scale from 1 to 5 and see where you are, and then go back and try to get better at it, and then go back and get better at it on the each individual sides of it. That's just something that would be very helpful. One of the things that I've done before when it comes to mental imagery in the beginning is just kind of rate yourself, but change each aspect of the mental imagery to get it better and get it stronger to where you're actually feeling it and becoming it.
I love that vividness test that you guys do to access that. It's is it okay that I give out this address?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, endthezonesecrets.com/resources. Again, endthezonesecrets.com/resources to go take that vividness test. That intrigues me tremendously. At least that's a starting point for somebody, right? And they know they may struggle with it to go take that test, and then they can kind of work on it from there. Go back, take the test like you were saying, Shannon, and then see where they score again. And encompassing all of this is breathing, right? So tell me the importance of breathing and what advice you guys would have on that. I've actually gone so far as to read books about breathing. Just breathing by itself, it has nothing to do with the game of golf. I've had other guests on the past talk about the importance of this. How I try to teach this is that it kind of brings you back into the moment, right? So you got all these distractions around you. You have anxiety, you have fear, all these things. But when you breathe, you focus on your breath. It kind of puts you back into the now, calms you. It's like your body's way of connecting back to the brain. The body's like, okay, brain, look, we're good down here. We're breathing. If you're not breathing, the brain's like, okay, wait a minute. Body's not breathing. Shut everything down. Lock it down right now. Something's wrong. So breathing's huge. What do you guys emphasize in regards to that?
So the cool thing about breathing is you can obviously you can raise your heart rate, you can lower your heart rate. When you take a breath, a diaphragmic breath, when I say that, just more of a belly breath, you're going to clear it acts like a washing machine for your brain, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
And so there was a study that was done out of Stanford, and I believe UCLA. There was two that was where they had over 700 people across the US. They actually used, the different top styles, the box breathing, and the box breathing can be 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, or 6 seconds hold, 4 seconds in, all the different ranges. They used all of those. But then the one that they found that in the beginning it was called the cyclic psi, and then they actually changed the name a few months later to physiological psi. They found that actual that kind of breath is more has more performance oriented when it comes to the brain and getting your body to relaxed. Okay, and it's very simple. It's basically you're taking two breaths in. The first deep breath is 2 seconds. Your second breath is like 1 second. And then you take a 6 second long exhale out as you go. And what happens is if you do that, it literally, as far as stress states, one of the things that they found with over the 700 people that was involved in this test, it actually lowered their stress level. And so, for example, if you did this, if you did that for 5 minutes in the morning, it will lower. It's kind of like, you know, you have your base level heart rate, like your waking heart rate. What you're doing is if you did that for 5 minutes, you are lowering your stress base level at the beginning. So then when stress does come in, it takes you a lot longer to get in what we call a red light state, or a state where you don't really want to hit the ball. And it's actually really good for clearing your mind. I think, matter of fact, one of the things that we suggest right of like when you address the ball, to take a deep breath, because what it does is it clears your mind, relaxes your body, and it calms you immediately. So then you could be more focused and dialed in actually hitting the shot.
Yeah, I love that analogy. It's a washing machine for the brain. I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah, and I'll say this, when you talking about it being in the past and also in the future, that's what you got, anxiety, depression, things like that. Whereas depression kind of comes from not releasing a shot or a past shot, and so you're dwelling on it, and then it creates a snowball effect. And then you also have thinking about, the next few holes. You got a hole that's been like a stronghold in the past, and you always mess up, and it's always a hole that you tend to always hit it in the water. So these are things that are always taking the golfers out of the present moment. But here's the interesting thing. I love what Sean Foley said to me one time. He said, "Bo, we're always in the zone or in flow state. What happens is we just take ourselves out of it more times than not." And I absolutely agree with him, because when we're in flow state, research has shown that we're infatuated with the present moment. And so the beautiful thing about breathing, especially the physiological sigh, is that when you're constantly thinking about your breath and as you're doing it, and if you do exactly what Shannon just mentioned earlier, where you're actually counting, then what you're doing is you're bringing yourself back to the present moment. At that point, you're only thinking about your breath. Well, guess what? You're in the present moment. And so this is a tool that we use with our tour players, our college players, and even our clients. It's a fantastic way to do a release of a bad shot that just happened. It's also a fantastic way to help deal with nerves, any type of anxiety that's coming up to a upcoming shot. And so it's a great way to get you back into the present moment. And we can go deeper on this, but the biggest thing that we know from flow state research is that you are always in the present moment, and there's very little conscious level of thought happening. And so just by breathing, that's one of the way to kind of get you back to the present moment. But again, kind of get you go deeper into very little conscious level of thought. That's the caveman golf that we talk about, and that's why Second Domestic Training is so important to unlock that. And again, I love the breath because it's incorporated into the routine, but it's a great way to manage your stress levels throughout the round, and then more importantly, get you back to the present moment for each shot.
Yeah, no doubt. One of the things you guys also talk about, and this is a huge topic. I mean, I think if we're being honest with one another, we've all experienced this, and it's overcoming the competition anxiety. I see this a lot with junior players, especially, and it's something, you have some junior players and adult players too that are really good, and they're could easily break par. And they get out there in competition and they're shooting 5, 10, 12, 15 shots above what their potential is just because of that anxiety. What tips do you guys have, without giving away too much from your book, but what tips do you guys have to help the player listening deal with that dreadful competition anxiety?
Oh man, I am at war with anxiety because of what it's done in my life, what it's done in some of my friends' life. And so let's talk about the stimulus first and foremost. What is anxiety? What's going on the night before? Well, you're probably having visions of the future of the next day, a lot of worry, a lot of doubt. You got butterflies in your stomach, you're clammy, your heart rates higher and stuff like that, right? So those are kind of the stimulus. There's probably a few other that some people get, sweating or whatnot. That could be there as well. But let's revert this. Let's talk about, on Christmas. I was fortunate growing up. I had some really great Christmases and stuff like that. But what was my stimulus the night before on Christmas Eve of what was going on in my body? Well, it was butterflies in my stomach, visions of the future, clammy hands. It's the same exact stimulus. That's mind-blowing. So what we need to do is, and I'll give you an example. We need to reframe nervousness to exciting is what we need to do. And the way you do it is very similar like this. I like to tell a story of a family that took their son to Disney World. And so the family, they took the son to Disney World. And then when they get there, in Disney, if anybody has ever been there, a lot of the rides that they have that, you're sitting on this thing, you're going through, things would pop up and stuff like that. And the child, their baby would get scared when things would happen. And what was going on was the family said, "Hey, we're at Disney World. This is fun." And so then they took him to the next ride. The other things were going on, and they just kept reframing and saying to their child, "Hey, we're at Disney. This is fun." So then, after about the third time they were going through, the kid was having fun and enjoying it. "Hey, we're at Disney. This is fun," right? So then, what happened was, on the way home, they were on the flight way home, and they started hitting turbulence, a lot of turbulence, where one of the storage and things came down, and everybody was kind of freaking out on the plane. But then when they looked over at their child, the child was laughing and saying, "Hey, mom, dad, this is just like Disney World. This is fun." You see, that's the power of reframing. Psychologists use it in their therapy and stuff like that. Now, here's the thing. I want to say this. First and foremost, I'm not a psychologist, but I am a mental performance coach. And reframing it, this stuff works. I've worked with one of my clients would have panic attacks. She would watch herself in a race, okay, and would literally almost have a panic attack. That's how severe her anxiety was. After her reframing it, so then this is what I would simply tell. Okay, this is how you change it. Very simple. Anytime you think about your competition or think about what's coming up, reframe it. "I'm excited. This has given me the opportunity to perform at my best, and I perform." So then what you're doing is, not only you're reframing your mind, you're adding power talk to it, because words can actually change how you feel as well. And you start changing it. All right, so you got a tournament coming up, and let's say you're playing at Pinehurst, and you got a tournament. Anytime you think about it, anytime somebody mentions about it, or whenever you do your mental imagery, incorporate that power talk in it and say, "This is exciting. I get to perform at my best. I can't wait to do this." It just keep and reform it, reform it. I guarantee you, what'll happen is, when you step up and you start getting the performance, you're going to get into performance mode and not anxiety mode.
Yeah, I think the key word there that stands out to me is I get to.
Absolutely.
I get to do this instead of I have to go do this, or that get to is huge because like you said, it just reframes the mind and that you're in a privileged position, and makes you appreciate it a little bit more. I love that.
Absolutely.
Bo, I'll ask you this. You've played the round. All right, maybe you've experienced some anxiety in that round. You didn't play your best. Now it's time to evaluate that round. Discuss maybe some tips and advice that you would give on that post-round review, because I try to encourage students to not only focus on what you didn't do well, but focus on what you did do well, because you got to build confidence off of what you did do well. It's not everything's bad. Of course, you got to learn off of that, right? And it's never a failure. I tell students, you're not failing, you're learning. So part of that has to do with that post-round review. What are your thoughts on that?
You said it right there on the very last part. We're not ever failing, because then you look at Thomas Edison. Well, it was like, what, over 2,000 ways that he just didn't find that it worked. Most people say, well, it was 2,000 failures. No, just 2,000 ways he just found that it didn't work. And it's something that it becomes a learning opportunity. And we totally agree with that. And it's one of the biggest things that I see that many golfers do in this game very poorly, is that they always revert back to the negative. They always look at the what if. And for example, they could have broken 80 and they go back to look at hole 18 and they look at the three putt and they just focus on that, but yet they totally neglect all of the incredible things that they did throughout the round that allowed them to be in a position in the first place to even have a chance at breaking 80, such as, hey, for the first time this year, he was able to hit 70% of his fairways. Awesome. Well, that put him in a really good position to make it things easier on his approach shots. And so when we work with players, one of the biggest things that we're really, 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 really big believers in is journaling. And one of the things that I will say that has been kind of a secret weapon for a lot of our clients and making some really big gains, especially with our college players and tour players, because the reality is it gets really, really difficult for a player that gets close to scratch golf to lower their scoring average or their handicap index by a pretty significant margin. Like, it's really, really tough. As you get close to scratch golf, to take just one stroke off, it's really difficult. And one of the best ways to do that in a very quick time span is to make a new habit of actually journaling your rounds. And so one of the things we coach our players to do is they have their phone. Their phone is always with them. The beautiful thing is they can open up their notes section in a phone, and while they're playing, they can just voice text or just type in something really quick, like, hey, hole four, I pulled this shot into the trees. And say I had a negative thought. I mean, just something very quick and easy like that. But then after the round, they need to take the time to actually expand and go back and actually get a little bit more detailed on what was actually happening. And this is the beauty about the post-round review, because when you do this well, you can take the approach like Kobe Bryant did. I'll never forget watching an interview where the reporter, somebody that was interviewing him, I think it was for a podcast, it could have just been for something else, but it doesn't matter. What he asked is like, how do you handle, losing? And he was like, good. The guy's face was like, what do you mean? And he said, that's good, because I'm learning. And he said, now don't get me wrong, like, I'm also learning from my games that I win and I play really well, but I love it when I actually do lose a game, because it gives me an opportunity to go back and actually see what else I need to improve and get better at. And so when we take that growth mindset approach to everything that we're doing inside the post-round review, my goodness, we can uncover some amazing, amazing gold mine things. And when I mean by that is when you look at one of our college teams that we work with currently, they were outside the top 50 in the fall, and currently right now they should be in the next rankings inside the top 20. But as a team, they have lowered their scoring average collectively as a team. I was just looking at the data earlier this morning. They have lowered their strokes, strokes differential by 2.4 strokes. That is a big deal at the college level, because that is the difference between being outside the top 50 and potentially, if they keep on the current trend, they could be a top 10 team here in the next 3 to 4 weeks. But here's the thing, none of that would have been possible if they didn't actually buy in to the idea of actually doing some detailed journaling. So again, going deeper on that, it's them taking the approach like, hey, what did I do well? Always start there first. Start with, hey, I actually had some good up and downs. My scrambling percentage around the green was like 60%. And if you're tracking your data, which I highly encourage, do it with strokes gain data, that is. And you can see with Clipped, love Clipped, I'm a big fan of it. And you can see some amazing stats that will give you a better idea of what you're doing well, but even more so, seeing, okay, hey, you know what? I actually only hit seven greens in regulation. And I know with my benchmark being compared to a scratch golfer, I need to get that to 11. And so there we can narrow that down and go, well, all right, so I'm actually struggling from 100 and 125 yards. Well, I've been spending all my time practicing on the range, working on what my swing coach told me to do, and I'm hitting nothing but 7 irons. And then we go, okay, well, why are we spending all your time hitting a 150 to 160 yard shot when the data is showing that we need to spend more time in between 100 and 120? And so that's the beautiful thing about data, but also doing a post-round review, is that you can see that very clearly and then going even deeper. And this is why the mental is so important. Because if you
To
go back to
expand
that
on,
example, yeah, what'd you say?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but to expand on what you were talking about there with clipped, a lot of people may not have heard of that. It's CLIPPD, so clipped.com. Go check that. I'm glad you said that, Bo, because that is a fantastic resource. Again, clipped, CLIPPD.com. Go check that out, and you'll see what Bo's talking about there. Sorry, go ahead and finish what you were
No,
saying.
that's good. I'm a huge proponent of it, and it's pretty dang amazing because it literally gives you the same almost level of stats that ShotLink has given the PGA Tour players. I mean, it is a game
Yeah.
changer.
Yeah,
And
no
so,
doubt.
with that said, like when we go deeper, this is where a lot of people kind of stop halfway. They go back and they look at the data, and don't get me wrong, it's still going to get you in a pretty good spot. But when we go deeper and we do the journaling, like I gave the example earlier, like on hole four, I pulled it left, I had a negative thought. See, what most players wrongly do is they go into, hey, I need to just go and hit more drives and just go work on the range. Wait a second, what was the negative thought that entered your mind, and why did we have doubt over that shot in the first place? This is one of the first steps that it always comes back to when it comes to, I can do the shot on the range, I can hit all the shots, but then under pressure, I fold. And what's interesting about that is, this will be a good one-liner for those of you that like to take notes and don't crash when you do this, but this has been amazing for a lot of our clients, and it's what we always preach day in, day out. Where your attention goes, energy flows. Where is your attention? Is it on your target, or are you focusing more on your obstacle and what you want to avoid? And so that's what we find in the post-round review with our players. And we go deeper in the post-round review and some of the journaling. We can uncover some negative habit loops that they are routinely getting themselves in. And, you know, it's no secret that over the last many years, so many people have been on this rage about fixing their swing, working on their swing. And that's the first thing, sadly, that many players go to, when the reality of it is that they had a negative thought and they had doubt. Now, the one thing I will always remember with my time being with David before he presented at MIT, before he really became mainstream, was one of the common denominators that he found for golfers that miss putts always rooted back to indecision. Well, guess what? It's true for every area of your game. If you are indecisive over a shot, you are not going to hit that shot well. And it's funny because whenever we ask our players point blank, what is your percentage of success when you have a negative thought, a doubt, or indecision over a situation, second guessing wind, all that? It's funny because we'll see a black and white answer where they'll come back and tell us, you know, I'm probably about 15%. And this is where we go deep into how to overcome competition anxiety. We talk a little bit about mind mapping, but guys, this is so powerful because when you put a spotlight on the issue, and again, you can't ever uncover that until you do journaling. But when you actually do that and you put the spotlight there and you see that there's a routine pattern of that, and then we go one step further and we ask, okay, what's your success rate when you keep engaging in this old behavior or autopilot behavior? And they say, you know, something like 15%. Well, then you have a choice. You can keep going down that same path and keep doing the same thing over and over again. But that's like the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Or now we're presented with facts. Hey, I only have a 15% success rate in this old behavior. I need to change course and do something different. And again, you can't uncover that and do the next practical step, which is what we teach in the book with the ball reset. And again, doing a physiological side breath and then getting them into a right frame of mind where they can hit that next shot, you know, pretty dang well. And that's the beautiful thing about the post-round review. Huge believer in it. It's been one of our biggest game changers when we're working with clients. And it's one of the things that I wish all golfers would do well and actually get deeper with the mental side of it as well.
Yeah, I feel like it develops a game plan with the golfer's instructor as well. And correct me
Yes.
if I'm wrong on that, right? Because I mean,
1,000%.
Yeah, I mean,
Absolutely,
you're
especially if they report it to them, because that's the thing is you know the accountability part of it is the game changer with like what you're talking about. Yeah, you want to share that with them, because here's the thing, like in our case, we have them put all that information so that we can see it as well, because then we can see patterns that they won't see.
right. Yeah, it makes total sense. Guys, listen, I am like majorly pumped up after listening to you guys. I mean, true inspiration. I mean, you guys have some really, really good stuff here. Highly encourage you when you're, if you're listening, or you are listening, highly encourage you go out there and check out their book. Go to their website. It's inthezonesecrets.com. Again, inthezonesecrets.com. Purchase a book there. You can, I think you guys can purchase, you guys have it for sale on Amazon as well, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I think you guys have a workbook on there too. Learn more about you guys as well. But please go out there and check out the website. How about social media? Any place they can find you on social media?
Yeah, they can follow us personally on our Instagram accounts. We don't really spend a whole lot of time there because, although we should, we will be in the next year. But right now, our focus has been on the system, and we are just all in on our mission. One of the things we state in the book is we're on a mission to help 100,000 golfers shoot their new lifetime low rounds, and this is the first major step in making that a reality. And like you said, Steve, go on our website and it's on secrets.com. They'll see how we're going to do that, and one of the biggest ways that we'll be able to do that is through the book. And there's a few other resources that they can check out through our website, but then again, they can also get the book through Amazon. Either or is going to be fine.
Yeah, and we've only just scratched the surface on what we've talked about today in this podcast. You guys talk about so many other things in your book, like the fixed and growth mindset, the psychoneuromuscular training, diving deeper into what you guys mentioned earlier, the kinesthetic mental imagery, and so much more in this book. And highly encourage you to go out there and purchase this thing, please, because if you can't already tell in listening to Shannon and to Bo, they know their stuff, and you can learn a lot from this book. So I really encourage you to go out there and purchase it. Any closing thoughts, Shannon or Bo, that you want to give the listener?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the mental game we always can improve. And just the, you know, go and try some of the things that you've heard today, and try to prove us wrong, like Bo tried to prove me wrong, and see what happens to your game. That's the trick. You got to do it. You got to have action that takes it there. The last thing for me would be this. We've heard over and over again from a lot of the top athletes, even the top some of the top coaches in the world, not just in golf, but we're talking every sport. And they'll say that, you know, when it comes to the game, it's 90% mental and 10% physical. Then my question is this: why in the world are we spending 100% of the time of our training, of our practice, and getting better on 10% of the game? And so we really need to invest and go into, hey, you know, you want to get better in shape, you go to the gym. You want to get in better mental shape, let's go to the mental gym. Let's get some reps in. Let's work out, get better mentally so that we can go back in our game and to just increase our performance.
Yeah, great points.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about you, Steve. And I hope in the next like 10 years, we'll see instructors start moving more in this direction. Again, it's one of the reasons why we wrote the book, because you'll never hear me say that technique is not important. It is important. You know, I come from a tree of Morad and being blessed by some of the best coaches in the world. Again, like Sean Foley, Andy Plummer, Mike Bennett, Stack and Tilt, John Doherty, who's kind of like a hidden guy, but in my opinion, one of the best in the world when it comes to Morad and all things swing related. And again, David Orr, sorry, it's funny enough, he's kind of coming out of retirement and doing some stuff with Full Swing with Alex Smalley, which is kind of comical in and of itself. But the biggest thing I will say is that technique is important, but let's put it in the right perspective and the right balance. And sadly, too many golfers are just doing 100% all technique. And as you guys may have remembered earlier in this, we talked about the beginner study. Don't get behind the eight ball. Like, start doing it right out of the gate. And what we talk about in the book is how you can actually accelerate swing changes doing this. And so this would be to your benefit if you are working with a coach and you're doing anything related to your swing or on your game. This will be kind of like putting it on steroids. And again, you still got to know how to do it and what to do. And that's why I always love golf coaches and their pursuit of information and knowledge, things like that. But Steve, I also love that you are also doing a great job educating coaches and golfers alike and showing that there is a true balance between the physical and the mental.
Well, thank you. It's important. I mean, it's something honestly that I struggled with growing up. I had a terrible mental mindset, and I made it a huge priority when I became a golf instructor to not only focus on the physical aspect but the mental aspect, because I struggled with it, you know, and it's not fun. And no one was there to teach me these sort of things. And if I can emphasize this as much as possible, I'm going to. But thank you to you guys for what you're doing for the game of golf. This is amazing. It's you've helped so many golfers already. You're going to continue to help more in the future. And I cannot thank you enough for writing this book and for your insights and what you're giving back to the game. And ultimately, our entire goal here collectively is to just grow the game and make people better and enjoy the game more. You know, that's what we want to see. And you guys are doing a wonderful job of that. I can't thank you enough. Congratulations on this fantastic book. Please, 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 I'm begging you, go out there and check this book out. Purchase this book, InTheZoneSecrets.com. You will not regret it. Bo, Shannon, thank you guys so very much for your time. I know you're busy. I appreciate you taking the time to conversate with me.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, for having us on. It was awesome.
There's a perfect shot out there trying to find each and every one of us. All we got to do is get ourselves out of its way. Let it choose us.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bo and Shannon. If you can't tell these guys know their stuff, I don't know what else to tell you, because they certainly do. Thank you so much to these guys again for taking the time to come on and share this extremely important information with you. Now it's time for you to take that information, go out there and apply it. First of all, start by getting their book. Go to InTheZoneSecrets.com, purchase your book. You can also find it on Amazon. Get started on this journey to start conquering and mastering your mental game so that you can then take your game to that next level, to find that zone that they're talking about, get into it, and then have the best round of your life. Stuff works. I promise you it works. It's just a matter of practicing it and believing in it and dedicating yourself to it, and you will find that it will make a tremendous difference. So again, go out there, start this journey. If I can help you in any way, shape, or form, please let me know. Be on the lookout for the next podcast dropping on Wednesday, April the 3rd. I have another great topic for you in that episode. And just right around the corner from the Masters. Gosh, I can't believe it. The Masters is going to be here really, really soon. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that as well and give predictions on favorites for the Masters tournament. So make sure you tune in for that. So go out there and follow the podcast. Give me some 5-star ratings if you feel like I deserve it, and give me a good review as well. That also helps. Like I mentioned, every podcast, it just helps me move up those podcast rankings so I can get in front of more listeners and share the podcast with you as well. Be on the lookout for some other great topics that I'll post on social media. Remember, it's at Go Forth Golf on Instagram, TikTok, and Go Forth Golf Instruction on Facebook. I love to interact with you. Make sure you check that out and follow me on all of those social media pages. Until the next episode, keep hitting those drives long and straight. Keep hitting those greens. Keep draining those putts. Most of all, get out there, have a good time. In this case, get out there and find the zone. Don't forget to do something nice for somebody today, because it makes you feel absolutely amazing to put somebody else ahead of yourself. And remember, together, let's go forth to a better golf game.
You've been listening to the Go Forth and Golf Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to receive alerts on new episodes. For more information, please follow us on social media at Go Forth Golf Instruction, or visit our website at goforthgolfinstruction.com. Remember, together, let's go forth to a better golf game.